Hey everybody, it's Joe Trippi and welcome back to That Trippi Show, which we are proud to say is not banned from any social media platform yet. Yeah, good Alex. It was a busy week. Where do you want to start?
Oh man, so much to cover, but I think we got to start in Texas, Joe. Obviously, special election in Texas 6, wide open field. Everyone was thinking it'd be close, but no Dems made the top two for the runoff. So we're essentially shut out of this seat. And honestly, if people weren't even listening to this podcast, I bet a bunch of people didn't even know there was an election happening.
Whole thing is kind of crazy. Ron Wright, the congressman, votes to overturn the election on January 6th, moments after the insurrection. He then gets COVID, dies of it. His widow is running it for his seat with the full support of Donald Trump and the Club for Growth, who came in and spent money and endorsed and made a lot of noise for her. And she gets 19% of the vote, folks. 19%. This is with Trump, Club for Growth, et cetera, all thrown in for her. And the Democrats, well, we run 10 candidates. we run 10 different people. Jana Sanchez, who is a strong Democrat in the district, is the strongest one. She misses making the runoff by 354 votes. And this is crazy because this is a district that Trump won by 12 points in 2016. And yeah, he did win it against Biden in 2020, but he won it by 3 points.
He went from
12 points in 16 to 3 points, 51-48. This is a 51-48 Trump district in 2021. So we miss it by 354 votes, and mostly because no one fought. I mean, Operation 147 that Alex and I and a bunch of folks started up to try to take on the 147 insurrectionists that remain in or represent districts in the House and Senate. We went in. We just started out, so we hadn't raised a lot of money yet, but we went in with a huge portion of what we had at the time and in support of Jana Sanchez, but no one else in the party did, no other groups. And I just found that astonishing and that no one helped put this race on the map. Now, as you said, Alex, we've got two Trump Republicans, by the way, fighting it out in a district where in the general election, there'll be no Democrat on the ballot now because 354 votes. It all matters. And if just one less Democrat had run, 9 instead of the 10, or 8 instead of the 10, or had one other group or someone just pushed a little bit, it would have made that 354.
Yeah, with like a few, you and I know, a few grand was literally the difference here, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. And so, no, I think part of it was, first of all, I've said this before, we as a party, and even with the net roots and the grassroots money, get enthralled with the big races. We're already looking at, who's going to be running in this Senate seat. But the House is where the fight's going to be in now and in 2022. And people still are not getting that. And other groups in the party don't seem to be getting it. They skipped this race, I think, because they thought, hey, even if we win, first of all, she can't win. And even if she does, we might lose the seat with redistricting in Texas after the census. Well, the fact is, all that might be true. First of all, she could have won. She could have at least been in it. We would be making the case in that general election coming up that we would have been against a strongly supported Trump candidate in Wright. But this district is not, that's not a big thing. There was a candidate, a Republican candidate, who picked off 3 or 4 points running opposed to Trump and sort of with the Liz Cheney wing of the party. Those people would have been able to be picked up. We had a shot at this seat and we should have taken it because, first of all, Yeah. Okay. Look, first of all, Texas is gaining seats. That means it's going to be, when they redraw the lines, they're going to have a tougher time making some of these seats as red as they are. They're going to have to blend them out, even if you're the Republicans drawing the lines. Could be to get as many seats as you want, you've got to spread the Republican vote out.
Right.
So the districts actually could have worked for us. And second of all, yeah, there would be an incumbent Democratic House member in Texas who is in a district. Some of the counties may have changed on them on Sanchez, but she'd be a sitting member, an incumbent running for re-election in 2022, with the, you know, all the advantages of being in office and being able to make her case. But that is never going to happen. And the reason it's not going to happen is because, frankly, the Democrat, we just didn't get our act together,
right,
in a district that I think mattered.
This is either good news or just mind-boggling. You know, Romney won the district by 17 points in 2012, I think. Obviously, you mentioned Trump won it big in 16, and it was only 3 this past time. Any idiot can look at that and say there's a clear trend here, and not just in the district or in Texas.
But also, that he won by 3 points, okay, before the insurrection, before Biden got the vaccines out there, and the economy really started to move in the last few months. And Biden's approval rating is way above
right
nationally where it was on election day. So in other words, like, oh, he went from winning it by 12 to winning it by 3. We're not going to play there and ignore everything that's happened. That 20% of Republicans actually think Biden's doing a good job on that, you know, on some of these things. To think that, again, this is with Trump and Club for Growth spending money, coming out publicly, endorsing Wright, she gets 19% of the vote. I mean, come on. And we miss the runoff against her by 354 votes. And I'd rather make the case. By the way, the same way Liz Cheney is now making the case, whether she goes down or not, and we'll talk about that a little later, but I mean, on the leadership thing, she's making a case right now against this, you know, the Trump cult. I'd rather go down in a general election making that argument and trying to win some of these independent moderate Republicans over. But if you have two Trump candidates running against each other in the runoff, how's that work?
Right.
The whole district's going to hear nothing about how great Trump is. It's just stupid.
So, Joe, there are a bunch of big national races that a lot of them shaped up this week. You got, obviously, Tim Ryan in Ohio, Charlie Crist announcing he's going to run for governor against Ron DeSantis in Florida, and Connor Lamb, who's kind of the archetype moderate Democrat out of a swing district in Pennsylvania. He's talking about running for Senate. And we'll get more into that, but that's got to be good news with some of these candidates taking big steps, right?
I'd love to see Tim Ryan or any of these, you know, people win their races. You know, if Connor Lamb can run and win the Senate seat in Pennsylvania, that'd be great. But, you know, I hope to hell we damn well better win those House seats that they're leaving behind to do this, if this is what they do. And like I said, this is not against them doing it. It's just the whole fight in 2022, and we've got to get the party to focus on this, is the House of Representatives. And with the retirements, with the fact that incumbent presidents lose House seats in midterm elections, and even, you know, all the they've watched from other people out there projecting that anywhere from losing 10 to 3.5 just on the redrawing of the lines themselves. Forget about these people leaving these marginal seats to run for higher office. You put all that together, we lose the House, and this is what you're looking at. You're looking, remember, the 139 members of the House voted to overturn the election hours after the insurrection. Okay, so if they have the House by, you know, let's say 220 seats, 222, and 139, 140 of them are insurrectionist Trumpies. Well, that means two-thirds of the House majority will be led by the Trump side of the party in the House of Representatives. We're talking about, you know, speakers, committee chairs like Jim Jordan, Nunes. They'll be back and at it in a way that we'd be, you know, he'd make you pine for Mitch McConnell in the second half of Obama's presidency, as crazy and as obstructionist evil as that was. So that's what we're up against right now. And I think that's the whole, I think particularly Tim Ryan would be an incredible senator from Ohio. I'm not against him running. In fact, you know, he's worked hard. I am saying that it's not all that great. I mean, in other words, it's good news. Great. We can win the, you know, if they get the House majority, I tell you, you know, it puts democracy on the brink again, so much so that it may not be, you know, so you've got a Tim Ryan in the Senate. It may not matter, right? Because of what is going to happen in the House to disrupt and continue to take down our democracy if these guys are in charge. So I keep focusing on what these things do to impact the House. And given how tough things are going to be, the grassroots, and that was another thing, by the way, that Texas showed. We can't count on a lot of these party committees and things and sort of the super PACs out of the out of Washington that don't really get, sort of they're institutionally in a defensive crouch right now, just trying to defend our incumbents. And good, you know, that's needed too. So I'm not, but I've turned to spread out to win some of these marginal seats, particularly that are opening up right now. And what Texas showed is you can't count on them for that. We have to do it. And that's why.
Well, and what Texas showed is that the Republicans are already thinking this way. It's pretty clear, right?
Yeah.
Like the Club for Growth is ready. They're funded well.
Yeah. I mean, what's going on is they're on offense. They're pushing. They're going to push in exactly into these the three that we're talking about right now. Those three districts for sure will be places that the Republicans will be already moving into and with resources in candidate recruitment. And here we are losing two or three of our, you know, what could be the best defenders that we have in those districts. Again, I don't want to hold anybody back, but that means we have to make sure we're doubly focused on these places, doubly focused on how many of the 139 of the 147 that we can put pressure on or remove from office in 2022 and stop them. I mean, at all costs, stop them from becoming a majority in the House. I mean, the Senate's a different place. Yeah, we're in a dead heat there, you know, with Kamala breaking the tie. But, you know, but frankly, seven or eight, I think it was, of the 147 are in the Senate. So the majority of, and look, there are tons of problems I have with the Republicans in the Senate. I'm just saying it'd be hard pressed for a Trump majority to take over the Senate. I don't see that happening. It's clear that the place where there could be pretty easily be, first of all, it's already a Trump majority of the House caucus. So all they have to do is win 4, 5, 6 seats and you have a Trump majority, a Trump speaker, you know, beholden to him and furthering the big lie and also chasing whatever investigative lies they're going to make up and go after the Biden administration on. So that's the fear I have. Yeah, I'd be happy if we picked up, obviously, at Ohio and Pennsylvania Senate seat. But if it comes at the expense of losing those two House seats, we may be regretting that's the choice we made.
Yeah, I mean, it seems just so institutionally short-sighted, right? And we'll move on. But I think in a vacuum, you'd obviously trade one out of 435 versus one out of 100. But where the battlefield is and where the stakes are right now, it just seems like we're once again kind of making these big institutional blunders that might hurt us next year.
Well, it's not an institutional blunder. I mean, look, Tim Ryan, everybody should run for, you know, what they want, where they think they could best serve. That's okay. I mean, I understand why they're making those decisions. It's really us. I'm talking about the people who listen to this and the grassroots out there. Okay, if you're supporting Tim Ryan, make sure you throw some bucks at the person who's running in his district, that we buttress that up. The same with Chris in Florida, the same if Connor Lamb goes. It's not a, don't get enthralled with that Senate race and only the Senate race. And that tends to be what happens with us as a party. We get, including the Washington institutional PACs and things, they get much more focused on, you know, like, how are we going to take out McConnell last time, right? Yeah, right. Like, that was going to happen. How much money did we all spend and throw at that race because we could, you know, we were going to get McConnell.
Right.
You can get enthralled with the Senate race in Ohio, and probably we should, but pay attention to these House races. And that's what we didn't do in Texas 6, when there wasn't a whole lot of big distractions either. I mean, that right. was the other thing. It wasn't like there were a bunch of Senate races happening right now that we, you know, we're talking if Sanchez had just received $100,000 in added contributions from the net roots, grassroots out there, she would have been in this runoff and probably been able to raise a few million in the general election. So anyway, it's more about, again, I don't want to sound like I'm against people running for the Senate or governor. We need that. But it's more, we can't all lose focus on what really matters here. And if you see these people move up to a Senate and governor's race and you're all excited about it, start asking the important question: what's happening in their district? What can I do to help there? Don't lose sight of that. Let's keep focused. Let's not let up. We got to stop them in the House.
Joe, you mentioned distractions. Fortunately, I think the Republicans are facing a pretty major one right now, and it's not like they're, at least institutionally, a well-oiled machine either. Obviously, we're talking about Liz Cheney last week, maybe running for president. This week in the soap opera, she's, by all accounts, on her way out of congressional leadership and may lose her House seat, depending on how things go in the primary, for basically not bending the knee to Trump. What do you make of what's going on with the Cheney saga right now?
You mean not basically repeating the standing up to the big lie? That's what's going on there. That's why she's getting thrown out. But no. First of all, I still think she's going to run for president in their party. I mean, if you think about it, by cutting her loose, I'm with a lot of people who think she's now going to be more dangerous. She's going to speak her mind even more, and that's a good thing. This is why I'm still very optimistic about 2022. Their party is going to have this fight. There are going to be a bunch of these divisive primaries between people like Liz Cheney and some Trump-endorsed candidates. We saw how that worked in Texas 6. The anti lie candidate, for lack of Wood, was his name. He got 3 or 4% of the vote. I mean, it was all the vast majority of the people who voted on the Trump side of things. But that split is going to be different in different places. And even if it is 3 or 4 points, or in some cases 20 points of Republicans who vote the other way for the Liz Cheney type candidate in a race or a Romney, when they lose to the Trump candidate, those are people in the general election that I think Democrats can pick up if we are reaching out and trying to attract those voters who are clearly looking outside their party. That's why you see, you know, Republican registration falling, independent registration going up in most states. And I think that we're, so this Liz Cheney thing really matters. I mean, but she's calling it out pretty straight. I mean, I know that there are a lot of Republicans who, you know, are now saying that she's checked out and accepting her fate. That's what Politico says. But, you know, I think that
her op-ed was just so powerful, though.
Yeah. I mean, she said she was writing for history and not for her current job. And that, I think, is really pretty important. I mean, she, you know, quote that, there's good reason to believe that Trump's language can provoke violence again. Trump is seeking to unravel critical elements of our constitutional structure that make democracy work. Confidence in the result of elections and the rule of law. You know, she's challenging him head on. And, you know, Trump's out there recruiting candidates to run against, to primary her in Wyoming. My point here is that fight is not a distraction. That fight is going to continue, not just with her, but with other candidates and in primaries of throughout 2022. We need to be there. We need to take advantage of that. We need to be in Tim Ryan's district with a good candidate if he runs for the Senate, taking advantage of the split that's going to occur on their side and appealing to those suburban women, to the younger Republicans, to college-educated Republicans that we've already shown in Biden and we've seen this throughout the country. Those Republicans, we can bring them along. And by the way, we were bringing them along before the Corona, you know, relief package, before the, you know, economic stimulus, before he moved on infrastructure, all these things that are very popular right now, you know, getting 66% a kind of approval, all these moves that were happening with Republican suburban women, with younger Republicans, with college-educated Republicans, college-educated whites writ large, all were already occurring throughout 2020. And by the way, they were all occurring before the insurrection, which turned even more of them off. Right. So I think the more Liz Cheney is out there, and by the way, this is where I kind of get like, you know, the people say, oh God, how can you say something good about Liz Cheney? She's so damn conservative. Yeah, she's a hell, she really is conservative, much more conservative than Elise Stefanik, who's probably likely to replace her. But the fact is, one is living in a fantasy world that's building a lie, and one is, as she said, writing for history, speaking for history, not for her current job. We need more of that. You know, I know, and you just see a lot of this from the different factions out there. It's like the, you know, Lincoln Project gets hit on a lot of things. I mean, Republicans writ large, Romney even, they're getting it from both sides, right? The Republicans are trashing them because, I mean, the Trumpublicans are trashing them.
We'll come up with a better
name for it. They are going after the Cheneys, the Lincoln Projects, the Romneys, because, you know, because they're attacking Trump Republicans. And then we go after Cheney, a lot of on the left go after, because how could you, I mean, I tweeted something like, I'm rooting for her, and I just got, just like attacked, right? Because like, how could you be saying something nice about Cheney? Well, look, folks, this is the guy who ran the Howard Dean campaign, and Dick Cheney was anathema. I mean, he was the devil, as far as I was concerned, when we were running the Dean campaign mostly against George W. Bush and Cheney. I mean, obviously we were running in a primary, but that's what motivated our run. I got no love lost, right. And she's not her father either. That, I mean, she's got her own style and her own policies, but I'm just saying, like, this is no, it's not like I'm dying to go out and root for her, but right now for democracy, hell yeah. And for any of these Republicans or former Republicans that are trying to create an atmosphere where we can pull more Republicans away from Trumpism and towards democratic norms, I'm one of those. I think we need two functional parties, not one that's dysfunctional.
part of it too is I think there's still a lot of people in our party that can't even grasp that we're having to have this fight. Because to us, it's so obvious that Trump is a lunatic. It's like not even a question. But I think people are really underestimating the hold that he still has still. And obviously the events of this week.
It's not a hold he has. This is not a hold he has. Okay. He's a symptom. He is not why this is happening. This is happening because people are, responding to fear and to, what they perceive as a loss of power. And he got that and he played on it. And he he's not going anywhere. I've said that for a long time. But even if he does, it doesn't matter. Even if he does, we've got to pull some of these people back from the brink, or they're going to, particularly in the House, with these 139 members of the House that are just, leading this stuff and keep pounding the drum on it. We have the real jeopardy of turning the House of Representatives over to them. And like I said, if you thought Mitch McConnell being in charge of the Senate in the last years of Obama was a problem, wait till you see what happens with a House majority and what they do, what Jim Jordan and the like do with committee chairmanships and things like that. And so, no, right. I'm rooting for Liz Cheney on this. And by the way, that probably hurts her. There's a bunch of folks like me telling people, hey, let's she deserves support for being a true putting the party aside and being an American, even if it's a conservative American that you don't agree with on the issues. I think she's following a tradition that needs to be supported.
Well, you mentioned Trump's not going away, Joe. I just want to touch on this briefly. Obviously, Trump tried to hop back on social media this week in some kind of weird ways. He has his own little website now. And Facebook announced that he wouldn't be allowed back on. But obviously, he's trying to get back on Twitter. And thanks to a lot of actually people listening, we've already gotten him kicked off.
Yeah, yeah. They did an attempt yesterday on Twitter that got called out pretty quickly. And it looks like Twitter's at least suspended that account for 3 or 4 days while they take a look at it, which is great. Let them investigate it, and hopefully, if it's his account, they'll it's definitely be a violation of evading the ban, their policy on evading ban. So it'll get taken down for real. But the two things that I thought were great was Garrett Graff had a great tweet yesterday about the whole Facebook thing, and it was, oh, the irony of all the political world sitting on Twitter waiting for a report from Facebook, That was good. And also, I think Amanda Carpenter got a lot of attention on Twitter yesterday too, with, I think, a pretty decent proposal on how Facebook should handle reinstating Trump, if at all. And I'll just read you the quote. Here's my proposal for Facebook. Tell Trump if he officially concedes the 2020 election, states that Joe Biden won fair and square, and that there was no widespread election fraud, then okay, maybe we will think about letting you back. Until then, there is nothing to discuss. And I think that makes all the sense in the world. People are like, oh my God, what if he does it and they'll let him back? Well, there's the chances of him doing it are slim and none. And he's not going to do that. But that means, great, you don't do it, you're not on. If he does do it, then hold him to it. But anyway, I thought that was a really, I thought Amanda was really onto something there. It solves a lot of potential problems with, future bans of world leaders, et cetera. There's just some things you have to do to get back on. And if you're not willing to do it, you're off. And I think that's the best way to handle Trump.
Cool. Joe, I think that's just about all the time we have today.
Okay, Alex. Well, thanks for listening to that trippy show, everyone. We'll be back next week at our usual time with a very special guest. As usual, if you have a race you want us to spotlight or a question, please submit it on iTunes in the review section. Rate us while you're there. Or email us at thattrippyshow@gmail.com.
And I want to make a suggestion. Make it a house race, guys. Let's really focus on looking at some of these house races. If you got a candidate on someone who's running for Senate, let us know about it. Tweet at Joe, email us, leave it in iTunes.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, too, is if you look over the list of the 139 who voted for the insurrection, I mean, voted, you know, to overthrow the election. Look through there. Who do you think we should be taking a look at of those 139? Some of them look like they're just in really safe, you know, 90% Republican seats. We don't want to waste. And
if you want that list, all you got to do is go to operation147.com and click on the 147. You got all their faces on a big, nice website.
That's a plug, Alex. But listen, seriously, folks, you know, give us who you think we should take a look at, and maybe we'll do a report on the race and who's running and put some focus on those House races. So thanks a lot, and see you next Friday.